Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. The first segment of our show, we'll hear from Denise Young, who will be telling us all about Picture This. So tell me a little bit about your work in relation to disability life.
You're talking about in relation to the festival, correct?
Yes.
Our festival focuses on films made either by people with disabilities or about people with disabilities. The former films obviously are made by people with disabilities. They can be on any kind of topic to do with life, to do with politics, to do with art, anything. And the ones made about disability may or may not be made by a person with a disability, but it would be on a topic related to disability. Over our film festival length, we've had just about any topic you could imagine.
So, how did the work begin?
The work actually began with a group of people working with a filmmaker making films. I think it was 10 original folks, and this would have been about 17 years ago, made some films. They wanted to make films telling stories, and, you know, some of them were kind of, singing along to Britney Spears, people like that. And then some were stories about their life. I think of one in particular was a fellow put a camera on his wheelchair and went all over the city just talking about, you know, access, places he liked to go, things that made life difficult for him. Basically, then what happens is people make films, they want to show them to people. And we decided, well, let's show them to people. And if we're doing that, there must be other people out there doing that. So it just kind of slowly evolved from people starting that project to deciding we need to have a festival to celebrate film.
So, have you seen a lot of community support for the festival?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing because it's an international festival. So there's an international community of disabled artists who are literally from around the world. We've had films from every continent except Antarctica, and we're still waiting for that one. So there's kind of an international connection of community, and then there's a festival kind of circuit, we get connected to, people who are doing film around the world, and then there's, of course, more local communities, so there's, where we show the film. Our festival isn't one particular event. We do have a main festival every year, but we also have a traveling component, so we take it to communities around Canada and further beyond.
So, in your experience with the festival, is there any story that stands out for you in particular?
Oh my, 15 years. there's a ton of stories. I think one of the interesting stories that kind of shows that connection and shows the international nature of the film was we had a filmmaker, I can't even remember how many years ago, probably 6 or 7 years ago by now, who won one of our awards. We named one of our awards after a woman named Dodie Spittle, who was a woman with disabilities who was instrumental in starting our festival, and she sadly passed away a number of years ago. So we decided to create an award in her honor, which is a film that celebrated disability community. And we, we mean that in a broadest sense. So the particular film that won this year was from a Dutch filmmaker, and I can't quite remember the name. It'll come to me. Oh, 650 Million Plus One. So it was a story of disabled activists in Africa and various parts of Asia doing their work and telling their stories and you know, building community and strength in those stories. And when he won his award here, he promised that he was going to take it back to one of the communities that you know, was profiled in this award. And he ended up taking it back to a place called Kibera, which is the one of the largest communities in Kenya. That's a kind of a slum-based community just outside Nairobi. And this powerful community of people there who were involved in being profiled in this film decided that they wanted to make this award, put it in a monument outside, and to be a kind of a visual celebration of disability pride and culture, which is very difficult in a community like that. So then he made a second film, filming the challenges they went through, kind of figuring out how to do this award, how they're going to put it up there. And one of the folks who was involved in setting up that monument came back the next year to show us that film and talked about the experience and the importance of having a really positive profile of disability and what that meant to their community. So that's probably one of the, you know, one of the big highlights, but there have been just so many over the years.
So if you could send any message to the community about the need for a festival such as this, which is basically dispelling the myths of disability life,
yeah,
what would it be?
Holy cow, that's an interesting question. I think that people with disabilities are people, you know, and it's interesting because I think there are just so many myths around disability, and because we're a cross disability festival, there are so many myths around different kinds of disabilities. So having a disability status doesn't necessarily mean your experience is the same as someone else with a disability. So I think it is that like very broad, diverse, strong. You know, I think the strength of the disability community. That's something, especially if individuals are isolated. Like, that's one of the things we tried to do with the festival, is create an environment where people with disabilities can come together and celebrate who they are with each other, share their stories. So I guess it's not one message. It's just about, this is, you know, there are really positive things that are out there that are happening that we can celebrate. And I think people need to hear that side. Because I think the mainstream media has got the other side covered.
So what are the next steps for the festival?
Well, unfortunately and sadly, we're not even sure if we're going to be able to continue. This has been a sort of an ongoing challenge for us. But we have kind of an odd status. We sit within a larger organization that isn't an arts organization. So for many, many years, we've been able to get arts funding because we're clearly an arts festival. But now our provincial body has just notified us that this is the last year that they will provide that funding because we're not an arts organization. And then the federal government had made a special program for 3 years initially to fund organizations such as ours because they recognized there's this gap. A lot of disability organizations end up being kind of housed somewhere else just to have an infrastructure. And so they gave us an extra year, so that was 4 years that that program's ended. So we're going to have to do some soul searching and kind of figure out if we're going to be able to continue. We think it's such an important message to get out there, but if you can't get funding to do it, it makes it really difficult. So we're not sure.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you very much for being interested.
Of course. Love that story, folks. Hearing that a slum-based community out there would take a win for the disabled community and choose to make it a symbol of hope, not just for their community, but in a way, a symbol of hope for the future. Putting the trophy in a monument, recognizing that this person given so much to the disabled community simply by taking the time to talk to them, by recognizing that they all have a great story to share, by coming to understand these are just people with histories, goals, and hopes, dreams all their own. I find it remarkable that people who would most likely be struggling with the issue of poverty would take some of their resources and build hope into the community. Put into place something that says people with disabilities have strength and that they matter. This filmmaker's work mattered so much. It did draw the attention of the right people. It did bring disabilities to the forefront. It shed some light on these matters. The truth is, folks, disability issues are universal in nature. It's not just we have accessibility issues in our own community. It doesn't stop at the border. If we look at things in an international sense, everyone with a disability is looking for exactly that. Hope. A reason to believe. A reason to say to themselves, I am a person of strength, and I do matter to this community. But creating the perfect symbol of hope for that, it's got to speak into some lives and say, yes, we recognize that you are a person, and this community is not complete without you. It's got me floored, folks. Truth is, we should look at this and sort of model our own behavior after it. There are disability monuments in various places, but fact is, we have to recognize each one of them stands for something. We have to recognize that a disability monument isn't just some stone statue out there. It's a reflection of a person who gave something to the disabled community. It's a reflection of lives of strength and intelligence and capability. But beyond that, it's a sign that the future can be a meaningful one for people with disabilities. It's up to each member of the disabled community to say to themselves, what kind of future do I want? Do I want to be recognized as a person of strength and character? If you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink 4, HandyLink, numeral 4, gmail.com. Always love to hear from you folks at home. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAIN.org.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Denise Young from Picture This. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Terry Bremner from the Chronic Pain Association. So tell me a little bit about the Chronic Pain Association.
Chronic Pain Association of Canada is a non-for-profit organization that lobbies for the rights of chronic pain patients and tries to help eliminate and better the wait times, which is a huge hurdle for chronic pain people, and also accesses to services. So the association educates individuals that suffer from chronic pain through chronic pain support groups that we set up across the country. It's been proven and beneficial to learn from each other as a chronic pain individual. We all look so different, and we all have so different in diagnosis and treatment plans, but we all share the symptoms that come along with that disease.
So how does chronic pain typically affect a person?
Well, it for number one, it isn't just a matter of the pain that you may have in your hip, which is one of the areas that I've got pain. It affects emotionally, physically, financially. Usually a number of people that suffer from chronic pain, they've lost their job. They've lost their benefits. Most companies try to get chronic pain people off their benefits due to the fact that others, the premiums increase on it. So once the person's lost all their benefits, basically they're in poverty. And if it's not visible, either by, say, a wheelchair or crutches or a cast or a cane or a sling, it's very difficult to say that that person is in pain. There is no blood test that can say, Terry, you're in pain and you're 8 out of 10 in pain. There isn't anything like that that's out there.
So are there any treatments for types of chronic pain?
As far as treatments on the medical side, that varies to what the condition is of the chronic pain, and also the success of any one medication working on a number of patients is very unlikely, because we're all made up so differently. Though to get in front of a pain specialist in Canada, on average, is over 24 months. It's been shown that any individual that's been out of work and disabled for longer than a two-year period only stands a 2% chance of ever returning back to gainful employment. That's a really tough pill to swallow, because as a chronic pain person, your general practitioner doctor, your family doctor, he's probably going to go 4 to 6 months trying to help you out. Then the referral goes in to see a pain specialist, and then you go into that lineup. So even before people get to see a pain specialist, they're already down to that 2%. And if this Friday I was going to see a doctor, a pain specialist, and I've waited my 2 years, I'd be pretty excited. And so would my family and my friends. So when I go in to see the doctor in the pain clinic, they can open up their black bag and they could have some nerve blocks. And they could have some pharmacology part. We'll try this medication and that medication and see if that works. Though there is no cure in that black bag. And we as patients always think, geez, I'm finally going to get in and going to be pain-free after that. When in fact, it's not going to happen. And what we have to realize as chronic pain sufferers is that we have to educate ourselves on living with this disease and be able to build coping strategies that enable us to get through each day a little better. Those strategies could be self-taught strategies. They could be deep breathing, relaxation, listening to quiet music. Exercise plays a huge role in a chronic pain person's life, though I would think 98% of the people are afraid to do any type of exercise, because it's going to hurt.
So, in your time with the association, has there been any success that you've witnessed?
Success in which way, sorry?
Just in terms of educating people about chronic pain.
The success comes from going to the national conferences for the doctors, the Canadian Pain Society Conference, and they have an Atlantic Pain Conference each year. And going in there and setting up a table as an exhibitor, as an advocate, the way we're accepted amongst that medical field has really grown. And those doctors would love to see more of us being support groups and that out there. Though there's no funding that's available for that. And all of the initiatives that we do through the Chronic Pain Association of Canada, we have to go and knock on doors and basically sell our story and try to get some sponsorship, and that gets harder and harder each year to get to that point. So when we look at educating the patients, it's a tough thing to have to start learning about the difference between acute pain and chronic pain, and the difference between oxy medication and morphine and Demerol and cannabis, and what benefits each one of them has to an individual suffering in pain. So your family doctor in Windsor and my family doctor in Halifax, in a four-year post-medical program, only received one day in studying pain. So this makes it very difficult for doctors to treat chronic pain individuals because of not having the knowledge, number one. And number two, the way the media has looked upon pain medications and individuals taking pain medication and addictions, and it's not the pain person that's causing the problems out there in the marketplace. It's people that get these drugs in their hands and in another way that end up overdosing or doing things, but it all comes back to the chronic pain person. And so, again, the doctors don't want to prescribe these types of medications in fear of their patient doing something or them getting charged.
Mike, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
Terry went on to talk a little bit about how the Chronic Pain Association of Canada has the resources to start support groups nationwide. Just trying to get the word out there. So for more information, Google Chronic Pain Association and see what they have. Getting informed about a condition is always the key. Truth of the matter is, you can't deal with a situation you don't understand. And the Chronic Pain Association's work just to educate people, to have them understand you don't need to suffer. You don't need to face this alone. You might never get a complete cure, but the fact is, if you can improve the quality of life, it's still a win. And for someone who suffered with deep pain their whole life, to have any sort of relief, to have any of that lessened, that would be a blessing beyond belief. One day of education on the subject? Come on. Fact is, one day is not enough. Truth is, these doctors study all their lives to learn to be someone who helps the people. And they can't genuinely provide help or service if they don't know what they're dealing with. Needs to go deeper than that. Should be a course or some sort of extension in regards to understanding chronic pain. We need to look, we need to ask, are people in the medical community really being given all that they need to treat at their best? Medicine is not on the assembly line principle. It is not a matter of get them in, get them out, try to break 500 in an hour. No. It is about people, people facing this pain, this condition, each and every day, how it affects their whole lives, their employment, their social relationships, their families, all of it. These doctors need to look beyond all that. It is not simply a matter of write them a script and send them on their way. Understand it. Understand these are people who come to you for help, for wisdom. A doctor doesn't necessarily know everything about a given condition. That's true. But if they can provide some insight and some answers, it's a step forward, isn't it? My friends, let us be entirely honest. After 2 years of waiting to see a specialist, it is not at all unreasonable for a person affected with a condition like chronic pain to expect a little quality and a little care. after waiting all that time, the doctor should take some time to spend with them, to learn what the condition is, and to do the best they can to deal with it. Simply put, there is a shortage of doctors who really understand these matters. If there weren't, people could get in right away, explore different treatment options, and find what works. But leads me to wonder, how is it that these doctors don't understand? How is it they can just write a script and send them on their way? And if that doesn't work, wait another great amount of time to get in to see them again to say, this didn't work. I have to try something else. Doctors have families and people in their lives. The statistic that Terry gave me was that 1 in 3 in Canada is affected with chronic pain. And the truth is, it's a staggering number. It's almost a third of us. These doctors have to know somebody affected. And I'm not saying that there aren't those who care. There are doctors who will bend over backwards to try to find a way to help somebody. But the wait time, there's got to be something we, as a society, can do. I would not suggest that people with chronic pain try to self-medicate. No, that's a very bad approach. These doctors do know a great deal. They do take a lot of time and study. There's always room for more, that's true, but it also comes down to a matter of self-advocacy. For a person with a condition like chronic pain, it's also a matter of saying, this is what's affecting me, this is what I've tried, this is what has worked, this is what hasn't. And if you don't get the appropriate treatment, if you don't get support and help, there is absolutely nothing wrong with looking for a second opinion. Fact is, in the medical community, two heads really are better than one. It's all a question of from what angle you see it from. Now, if you're a patient, you see it from the standpoint of, I live with this every day. It is affecting me. Something must be done. If you see it from the doctor's standpoint, it's, I have 50 patients waiting to see me today. And true, that is something that affects them. But there must be some room for compromise. There must be some balance. Getting the care we need, getting the education we need in this sense, and also keeping things moving along. That's where organizations like the Chronic Pain Association really are doing some remarkable work. They're providing education, they're providing possibilities, they're helping people take the steps they need. And truth of the matter is, there's information out there. Just be careful what you look into. If it's a recognized organization, what they say is verifiable, yeah, you can probably trust it. But just going to any old website and saying, this will cure my chronic pain, no, that's not a safe approach. As Terry said, there is no direct cure, but there is management. There is the possibility of getting your lifestyle in order. Take control of the pain so it doesn't take control of you. And really, it is mind over matter. If you say to yourself, there's a way to handle this, whether it be with some medical help or just going out and doing some yoga, it's what works for me. You have to find that for yourself. You have to find what it is that is the most help to you. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.